Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls. With Maureen McGonigal and Joe Ferry on Rock Sport Radio.
Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Let's Hear It for the Girls on Rock Sport Radio for your weekly instalment of all things women in sport. I'm Jo Ferry, and joining me as ever is Maureen McGonigal and our guest this evening, June Lake, who many of you will know as That Face in Your Fridge. June was one of the original Tennent's girls featured on the cans. So thanks for joining us, June. It's great to have you in.
Hello, Jo. It's great to be here. Thank you.
And hello, Maureen.
Oh, good evening, Jo. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm nothing to complain about, so...
Makes a change.
We may as well go on with the show.
Quite before she thinks of something. Okay, time for the roundup. Maureen, let's kick us off with shooting.
We're going to start off with shooting, and it was a superb effort from Sinead McIntosh, which gave her a fourth place in the World Championships and added her two medals earlier this week, and with the added bonus of a quota place for Tokyo 2020. And, you know, she comes from a right shooting family because her sister Jen's a shooter and her dad Donald, I think, is a coach. So you don't argue with the McIntoshes because they know what they're doing.
It would seem so.
It would seem so. They, you know, they're a very successful family in their chosen sport, and it's just really good to hear that it's a family affair.
Absolutely. Shooting's really tough.
Yeah, it's one that I've never actually witnessed, and to be honest, I don't even think I've watched it when it's been on the Olympics.
Well, do you know, I've actually tried clay pigeon shooting. Many of the sports, June, that we discuss in here, I have never attempted or are being kind of...
Yeah. Finest moment was a wheelbarrow race that lets you know what we're
silver
up against.
Medal. Right. Silver medal.
Yeah, I think I could join you in that one.
Alright.
I could be in the wheelbarrow.
There you go. Sorted.
A joint effort.
But I have actually tried shooting before, and it's, I think people think of that as being a really easy thing, but even I did clay pigeon shooting, even the weight of it, it's hard to connect.
It's precise, it's concentration, and I suppose, you know, like anything where you need to be precise and concentrate, you need to have a fit body and a fit mind. So, you know, it does fall in quite nicely, and good luck to them, because, you know, I read quite a lot about their successes, and we don't often hear about shooting in any other programme, so Rock Sport brings you shooting.
Ideal.
And now we go on to swimming, and it's Jeanette McLean of Carnegie Swimming Club, and she is in the Masters race, and she sealed her time of 1:11.74 seconds to get a gold medal from Austria's Petra Lang, and she was joined in the rostrum by Dundee City Aquatics' Jane Grant, who took the bronze, and this was out at Slovenia for the European Masters Championships. So really good to hear that, you know, people are still competing and they're still winning. And then we've got two on the rostrum at the end of the day, from Carnegie and from Dundee, so well done to swimming as well. I'm going on now to cycling, and it was the British cycling national team that were the winners of the overall team classification in Ireland this week at Razenbaan.
I do. Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, well done to the team. I meant, but also well done to you for the pronunciation.
I'm sitting here so politely saying thank you, because I was trying to get my tongue round that way. Thank you, Joe. That was really kind of you.
Well done to the team. Well done to Maureen. I think it was tougher for you to say it than it was for them to win.
I think it probably was. Strange enough, Jenny Hall from Blair Gowrie tweeted, good week in Ireland to finish off the season now, looking forward to a bit of time off before getting back into training. And Jenny's father is Nigel Hall, and well known for being the chief executive of Scottish Athletics. He's now moved down to Britain, down to England for the British Athletics. But good to see Jenny coming on there. And then we go to Kerry McPhee, and Kerry McPhee always does a great tweet, and it's safe to say that she had a good time, because she said, had a good time at the Duke's Weekender. Clean sweep of everything. Nicely done. She's definitely a fan of the new gravel racing, and such a cool weekend. Fantastic event and mega participants. Would recommend the Duke's Weekender for 2019. Tough but bro. Thanks, team. Suited and booted from a very happy rider. So, do you know, she cheers you up, just the way she puts out her tweets. She's doing really well, but it's a tough gig, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cross-country bike riding. I mean, it's a lot of hard work and a lot of cool weather. So, you know, well done to Kerry. And we're going on to football, and not, as you'd all think, I'm not still shouting for Scottish Women's National Team, although I am. No, talking more about a particular game that went out on Friday, it was Hibs Lazies versus Farmington, and it was Hibs 2-0. But it was an historic game because it was the first domestic game to be covered on television. They went out live in MG Alba, and they've made a commitment to cover 4 games.
Amazing.
That's really, really good in terms of, you know, trying to get sponsorship in, trying to make awareness of the games and football to, you know, to the wider public. And as we look down the table, you know, Glasgow City are sitting there on the same points as Hibs, 47 each. We drop a little bit down to, we go to Celtic at 22. Celtic at 27 and then Forfar at 22. So there's pretty much of a gulf there. But I think Forfar Farmington were quite delighted and had about 350 folk out to watch on the night. So change days, I would think, June, from when you were kind of involved in football, there wasn't much happening in the women's game at that point.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I can't even think of any girls at school or, you know, when I was growing up, who even had any interest. It was very much something that was exclusively for boys, and, you know, girls, any girl who even thought about it would have been seen as strange. So it's lovely to see how things have turned around now, and, you know, just that, like everything, you know, everything evolves and everything's open to women, and women have more opportunities, not just in sport but in everything in life now, which is fabulous.
Absolutely.
But great to see the national team doing so well. Fantastic.
Although I do remember many years ago when I was working with Scottish women's football, we were asked to put on a show halftime at 10 at sixes.
That's great.
Which I think was held down at
the SECC.
And Alan Ferguson at that point had made contact to say, you know, we'd like to have the girls involved, and oh, this was really exciting to go out there and to participate in, because that was a great tournament.
Oh, it's fabulous.
You know, it was full, wasn't it?
It was great because it was a fun tournament and it was a family tournament, and even though you often had the Old Firm there was never any trouble. It was just all about coming out and enjoying the actual football, which was great. No, it was good.
I think
days.
The fact that it's indoor and, you know, people could go along and they were warm and they were dry and they could sit, and because it was sixes there was more games to see, and it was faster.
Yeah, and it was great. The clubs really supported it, so you always got, you know, top name players coming as well, which was great for young kids coming along too.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I think for families who maybe didn't want to go to an actual match, you maybe thought it'd be a wee bit intimidating with younger children, could come to the 10 at sixes and enjoy the atmosphere and see their stars.
There's definitely a school of thought that something like that should be brought back and to showcase. Maybe it's for the women to do it. We did
definitely.
Do that for a while. Again, at Scottish Women's Football, we did do that for a while at Kelvin Hall. So yeah, we'll have a wee
definitely,
think about that.
Yes.
So I'm just going to finish off the roundup tonight to talking about rugby. And again, because the Scotland Women's National team and National One have been sponsored by Tennent's. And O is quite strange because A, you know, associated with football, but B, also Tennent's Lager and alcohol associated with women. There's quite a lot of organisations, for instance, Scottish Women's Football, who will not take sponsorship from football, alcohol or companies, but rugby are right in there. So what happened this week? They had a match against GUSA Women's Rugby and a hard-fought 12-0 win over the Students. So I suppose they're just getting into some sort of pre-season there.
And also amazing, Tennent's in nearly 40 years sponsoring sport, which I think is great.
Well, that's actually a really interesting point, isn't it? Yeah, they've never been far off, whether it's been Scottish Cup football and now you've got rugby.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's one point I think we do need to make, one final kind of, let's talk about the scandal.
And I wonder what that is. Is that the same point that everybody's talking about just now?
It could be. Serena Williams?
Is it a match point? Is it Love All? Yes, Serena Williams. That was very, very interesting. And it's interesting how it's changed, you know, in terms of the decision process. It's interesting how it split people. You know, was she right? Was she wrong? We've all got our thoughts on it, so let's have a wee thought. Do you get any particular thoughts on it,
Jim? It was like a flashback to Joan McEnroe. It was like going
you
back in time.
You cannot be serious, Joan. Come on.
She obviously felt very strongly about that. I mean, she's not really a player that, okay, she's quite emotional sometimes, but I thought she obviously felt very, very strongly and felt that there was obviously a breaking point, and she felt she had to put her point over, and she kept saying that her daughter was watching. So maybe it's part of that thing that once you're a mum, you actually look at life differently. You think about the world for your child, and she thought, well, maybe this is something that I can do something about.
Yeah. I was slightly disappointed, you know, A, that she used this kind of excuse of for bad behaviour. Mm-hmm. No matter whether it was right or wrong, it was bad behaviour, poor behaviour. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about creating role models, and you talk about young girls aspiring to be there. And to use the fact that she felt it was sexist. Now, I think they've come out to say that, yes, it perhaps was. I think what happened after it and the fine that she was given was in excess than any other males had, and that's sexist. But what I think's wrong is I think that male judges, officials, whatever, they're looking for a different set of behaviour from women than they are from men. What in their head thinks acceptable, rather than across the board, you're a tennis player and this is how we will treat you. What about you, Jo? What were your thoughts there?
I was actually quite shocked when I saw the footage, because she is a strong character anyway. Everybody knows she's a very strong woman. But I think it was that kind of change in her intentions, because she was shouting, I've never shouted in my life and my daughter's watching. Mm-hmm. I think it was more, had that situation happened before she was a mother, she might not have actually reacted as strongly, but it was the fact that she in her head was thinking, my daughter's watching this and I want to be a role model for her. But it's just that kind of standard of behaviour, because if that was a guy shouting and bawling, I don't think people would have thought twice about it. Mm-hmm. I think it would almost have been like
there's
an expectation
other,
of that.
Other
but
ways
I think
to be a role.
The fact that then she's kind of came out and shouted and reacted so strongly, then that's the reason. You know, if it was a guy, you know what guys are like, especially tennis is different, but when you think about like football matches, you always see guys shouting at the ref and the player shouting at the ref, and that's just the kind of, that's what happens. But then you've got this woman standing herself in the middle of the court. She's not surrounded by any other team backing her up, and she's shouting and arguing her point. And I think people were a bit taken aback by that. Like,
I think she could have made her point in a much better way, because she's then suddenly labelled as emotional. You've just had a baby, you're emotional. And that actually takes away from what she's trying to achieve, because they're putting that label on her. Mm-hmm. So if she had dealt with it in a different manner, maybe a bit calmer, and kept the sort of words out that were inciting, you know, I think it would have held a lot more weight than actually going off in a rant.
Yeah. It's difficult, though, because I think obviously they're in the middle of this game and they've got eye on the prize and they're winning. Has it been a situation where somebody had then reacted, say, after the match had happened? Say they'd kind of looked back at a replay and they said, actually, we think this was... She might have reacted to it in a more constructive way, because she would have had maybe publicists round about her saying, do you know what, you actually... this is how you respond. She would have maybe almost had people kind of sitting her down and telling her, this is how you respond, whereas in that, like, that moment, she's just went full on. Yeah.
And I think the sad thing about it is it took away from the overall winner, the young Japanese girl that, you know, she's missed her moment of glory, and you see her being interviewed on television, and the first questions they ask her is, what do you think about Serena's outburst? Not about how well you've done. Congratulations. So, yeah, I think it's a sorry state, but, it keeps us going, doesn't it?
Well, it keeps everybody talking.
Yes,
and
that's
nothing
what we want
else, it keeps the focus on women in sport, you know, albeit maybe not for the right reasons, but we're talking about it.
That's very true, Jo. Very true.
Absolutely. Right, well, that was our roundup, and we'll be back with you with more from myself, Maureen and June right after this.
Love music. Live sport. Let's hear it for the girls with Maureen McGonigal and Jo Ferry on Rock Sport Radio.
We're back. You're listening to Rock Sport Radio. Love music, live sport. And you're listening to Let's Hear It for the Girls, where we're chatting all things women in sport. And this evening's guest is June Lake, who many of you will know as the very famous face on the Tennants Can. She was one of the Tennants Lovelies. How does it feel to still have that label? Do people still recognise you?
It's quite strange, actually. I think because women's role and the image of women has evolved so much. I mean, it's very much seen now as sexist. I mean, we're talking about the 80s, an era of shoulder pads and white high heels and De Monte earrings, you know, the size of of the earphones that we've got on. So it was all sort of in a time and a place. But it was probably one of the best jobs I ever did. We were so well treated. You know, we flew around the country in a company plane. You know, we met lots of people. It was fabulous. It was just a fabulous job. Yeah, occasionally, you know, I've maybe gone somewhere and somebody said, hey, you're not in a can, or I get the, oh, did I not have my hands round you, especially in the 1980s. So yeah, oh, wow. There's still a bit of that out there.
A penny for every time you heard that, you'd be rich then.
Yeah. So tell us how the 10-inch journey started, how you actually got into it.
It started, most of the girls were normally models or they were Miss Scotland. And what they did, they held very, very stringent interviews, and they would maybe keep an eye, the PR department would keep an eye on what girls were sort of up and coming, and there was a certain sort of image that you had to have. If you went out with a footballer, it was a no-no. You had to be quite kind of squeaky clean, because they were very much into, you know, it was a family brand. And tenants were actually, they were clever that they could see that things were going more towards women as well, that there was more women publicans, there was more women managers. So even the photography that we did, there was nothing that was too OTT. It had to have a certain image. So if there was a girl that had maybe done page 3 or anything that was a wee bit naughty, they wouldn't be considered either.
Yeah.
So I had been doing the beauty circuit in the white high heels, sort of up and down the country. And then I had won a couple of competitions. I'd won Miss Edinburgh and I'd won Blackheart Rum. And because I was contracted to another drinks company, they had approached me just before my contract ended and said, would you like to come for an interview? So it wasn't like, do you want to come and work for us? It was like, would you like to come and be interviewed? And then I went to the interview. You did some photo shots. You know, they wanted to check that you were, you know, photographic, and that your image fitted in with what they had an idea of what they wanted. And then the rest is history.
So they were very much looking for the kind of girl next door look.
Each set of cans, they actually produced a book from the 1985 was the centenary, and they produced a book which showed you the girls through the ages. I mean, some of them were quite risque when you look back, with like the first sets, but as it evolved, you could see that, you know, it was changing with the times. And ours was a theme of girls in white who were kind of supposed to look not too made up and sort of more kind of the girl next door type. The girls that were on the cans with me, one was a farmer's daughter, one was a Miss Ireland, and the other two were girls who modelled in Glasgow, same as me. So, you know, they had a certain image that they wanted you to portray. Plus, the company had been bought over by a larger group, so we weren't just exclusive to tenants. We were working for the Basque group, which meant that we were working on different sides of the trade. So a lot of that was maybe cash and carries and dealing with the public. And as our boss used to say, we're not just paying you to stand about and look pretty. You know, so you had to be quite articulate and be able to talk to people, and, you know, just walk up in an event and start making conversation. So it was very good training, and probably why so many of the girls, you know, my age are still working, because it was a great apprenticeship.
And exciting times then as well. And I think, you know, at that point, that's probably what a lot of young girls aspired to be.
Well, very much so. I mean, there wasn't a lot that happened for girls. There was not a big group of girls who did modelling in Glasgow at that time. And there wasn't, the promotion side was all models. You know, nowadays, because you can't say, oh, you're too old, or you're the wrong colour, or, you know, everything is all so PC now. But in those days, you know, it was like, oh, you had to be under 20 and normally blonde and a certain size, which they can't do now. And I was actually one of the few brunettes, which was strange. And we always laugh because we did a job. I had been working for, they were talking about, you're saying about alcohol sponsoring events. When I started working, there was a lot of cigarette promotion. And we did, Marlborough used to sponsor Brands Hatch and Donington, and we would go down to work. And I had gone for the interview, and I was the only brunette out of 60 blonde girls. And the thing was, I couldn't do anything. So if I decided I wanted to sneak off and get a bag of chips, it was like everyone said, oh, who was it? Oh, it was a dark haired one. Yeah. Whereas before, there was another 59 blondes, nobody knew which one was which.
But at least you were standing out.
Well, they had this picture, they had taken this aerial photograph of all the girls in their red boiler suits, and you can spot me because I'm the only one with dark hair. So yeah, so that, you know, things have changed very much since then. But in those days, it was a very kind of small group with a certain image that you had to have.
And that brought us to the conversation we were having earlier, Jo. You were talking about, you're just reminding me of the poster girls for racing and boxing, mm-hmm. etc., and the recent furore around that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion around the kind of abolishment, I guess, of Greg girls and the ring girls at boxing. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it is because, number one, they've said they believe it to be sexist, and secondly, because they think it kind of encourages bad behaviour amongst the sport, because you'll get a certain kind of, you know what it's like, you get the kind of the minority kind of ruin it for the majority, and you do often get a single group of people who shout things and it's not appropriate, and it seemed to be like almost like borderline sexual harassment. So
I mean, I did the ring girl thing as well for years, and I never, even through tenants, I mean, people used to, we used to get letters from women's groups saying, "Oh, not think you're exploited, and you know, you're a bad example to other women." And I remember one time I'd got one of these letters, and my boss said, "You know, do you want to answer it, or will I?" And we had just come back from a 2-week calendar in Val d'Isère. I had to do an opening up in Aberdeen. I'd flown up in a company plane, and then we had done 4 nights working with Bob Mughouse. So I actually didn't feel like I was particularly exploited. And I said, well, there is a certain, so obviously if you're on the outside and you think, oh, that girl's wearing a bikini and she's standing in a certain situation, she's been exploited. But it just depends on how you view the exploitation and how the girl herself feels. Well, I never ever felt that. I mean, there are jobs that I did that I came home from and I thought, oh, I wouldn't want to do that again. But the majority of things I did, I would say I never really felt that. And I can understand, though, that the way that, again, how things have changed, that's natural, that they're going to say, oh, no, that shouldn't be done and that shouldn't be done. I can, you know, the whole thing with the, you know, if you're, we used to do jobs for cigarette companies giving out cigarettes to people, you know, so there's the body who argue, well, you're encouraging people to smoke, but actually you were giving cigarettes to existing smokers. You weren't going up to children and saying, here, try a fag, you know. It was, so I think everything in its place. But I could, because even doing the boxing, I never felt that I was being exploited or badly treated. I mean, even when I came out, if I'm coming out late at night, there was somebody who always made sure I got to my car
I think maybe the issue wasn't so much that, it's more so that young girls want to get into sport, and if they can't see women participating in all the different sports, they then don't think that they're welcome in that sport. Mm. So I think that's an important reason of why we've changed. You know, it's this, you can't be what you can't see. And for a lot of young girls, they never aspire to be anything in sport because they couldn't see any role model. So I think that kind of goes in. And as you say, it's a society thing. It's a change through the years. Yeah. Nothing stays the same. For me, I'm kind of, I like the era that we're living in that's given women equal opportunities for all. But it's all about choice.
Yes,
you know,
very much.
And if you want to have the choice to do your particular thing, no one should stop you. They should encourage you. So that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. That was my career. We don't want my daughter to do it nowadays. Probably not, to be honest. And I feel the thing is, it's like saying, oh, youth is wasted on the young. You're busy enjoying what you have physically and making a career out of it. But I do wish I'd studied. So I'm very much about, although my daughter's a gymnast, education is a big thing for us as well. Yeah. And I keep saying to her, no, get your education, try and get a degree. And then, you know, if you want to do physical things, you can. But yeah. I've kept her away from the modelling completely. I mean, I've been obviously through my contacts, people have said, oh, why don't you have her doing this and next thing? And I've said, no. So,
but she is loving what she's doing.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah,
yes.
So that's all you need to.
We wouldn't have time for anything else, I don't think.
Well, that's the thing. Like you say, it's about choice. And I mean, I've got friends that have been ring girls and have kind of protested the point that's been made at the moment and said, you know, I made loads of friends through it. I was making money through it. I didn't wear anything that I felt was too much. And also, I wasn't ever made to wear anything that made me then feel exploited. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, it's just, they actually thought it was a, you know, good fun, and it was a fun job, and then they were making money out of it. Mm-hmm. So it was like bonus.
It's society's problem and a culture problem. It's what society thinks rather than actual reality, you know, because there are a lot of, you know, for instance, a lot of girls in your position having a bit of time would have taken it, and they would have been studying, etc., etc. You know, so it's how people make judgments on other people without really knowing knowing more about them. But yeah, I think it was great to have your name, Juno. I mean, and for me, I mean, I remember the Lager Girls, but yours is the only name that actually I can still recall.
That's so sad because it's unusual.
I think it's a lovely name, Junlee. I'm just quite sure if you were going to make up a name, a stage name, Junlee would be a perfect one.
A lot of people always ask me that if my name was made up. Apparently, it's a June Lake in California.
An actual lake,
a lake called the June Lake. Well, I think it's because sometimes with emails, I get bizarre emails or trying when you're trying to put in a password. Sometimes, or you know, you're setting up a username. I think there's other June Lakes out there.
Don't give away your password.
It's rather worrying for mother half.
So you were talking there about your daughter.
Yes.
So Christelle is 13.
14. She's just turned 14.
And she's a gymnast, but she's still at school, so she's working very hard. And you were saying that you feel that education's very much so.
And the thing with gym, I mean, she's a high performance gymnast, and she's in the elite club. She's at the City of Glasgow, which is a fantastic club. And she trains 25 hours a week. So,
wow.
As I always say to her, you have 25 hours less than everyone else to do your homework. And she's just going into S3. So, obviously, the work is now geared towards her Nat 5 exam. So, we've felt the jump this year. But, I mean, the club are very good. If she's got a lot of homework, they'll say, you know, just go home. And, you know, they support her very much. And the school have been very supportive too, which has been great. But she still said, even just the last month or two, that sometimes she does feel her life is just, you know, school, gym, homework, you know, which is very hard. So I have to work very, you know, put a lot of thought into when she sees her friends and to make sure that you know, she has social time as well. But she's lucky in that the group of friends that she has in school, they all have other commitments. She's got friends that do horse jumping. There's one who does competitive cheer, and they're very good at saying, right, who's free Saturday night? Oh, is Friday better? Oh, she's competing. Oh, she's at such and such. So because she's with sort of like-minded girls with commitments, it's easier. But sometimes it's hard for me if I've been doing a 16-hour shift and then I think, oh no, I said she could have 7 of them for a sleepover tonight. Derek, my partner, disappears and I'm left with them, but it's fine, it's what you do. And you have to support it. If you've got a child that's got talent and it's something that they enjoy, you know, you have to give it as much as you can as well as a parent.
And there's some exciting news for you this week in terms of Christelle and her nomination for, what category was it?
She got nominated for Scottish Junior Gymnast of the Year. There's three other nominees. There's a girl who does tumbling, who's very high standard. She's at GB level. And then there's a trio who are doing acrobatic. So it's quite, just to be nominated is amazing.
So what particular discipline does Christelle?
Christelle's an artistic gymnast, so she does the four pieces, which is bar, beam, vault and floor.
Ah, right, okay.
So really you have to be skilled in four pieces. I mean, it's very demanding, but gymnasts tend to be very fit. What's quite interesting is a lot of them, when they do retire, they actually go into another sport because there is a young sport. As I was saying to you earlier, Maureen, the problem is at the peak of your physical fitness and the peak of your gymnastic career is also the crucial time for your schoolwork and your education. So that's where the balance has to come in. But then for her, hopefully, if she can do her Nat 5s and her highers, it'll be 2 years before the next Commonwealth Games at that period. So if she wants to go for it, she can maybe take time out for that.
And we speak most weeks about athletics, and we look at the example of Laura Muir, who was studying to be a vet whilst becoming and being, mm-hmm. you know, a world-class athlete. And I think there is a great school of thought and a lot of research and the benefits being involved in sport can bring to your academic life and the different skills it teaches you. So I think it's great that you're thinking about how you get this balance right, because there are some parents there that want to stop everything, thinking, don't have time, they can't do sport. And actually, that's detrimental. It's finding the balance and supporting them through it.
I think it makes them very focused as well. And I think if they have a dream, then mentally they're focused on where they want to go, and they become very organised themselves at balancing their schoolwork. And you know, Christelle will come home and think, right, okay, I'm training tonight, but I'm only training till 7, so that means I can come in, have my dinner, have my shower, and I've got 2 hours. If she doesn't train on a certain day, she'll think, right, that's great, because I've got 3 hours. And I've tried to get her into the habit of do your homework as soon as you've got the opportunity, and then it frees up time, because I think if you come and then you're on that iPad for an hour and a half and then you've got to start your homework, which being a teenage girl, she is. And then that's when all the arguments start.
And does she have an ambition in terms of her academic life? What does she hope to be?
She's kind of gone round in circles a wee bit. She thought she wanted to do dentistry, and then I think she realised that for her personality it probably wasn't the right thing. So of course, just now she's taken like eight standard grades at school. I mean, back in the last century, 8.5s, which she's hoping that out of that she could have a generic business background or grounding that would take her to something else. She goes through phases of thinking that she wants to do something sporty, but still not. It's hard. It's hard. I mean, at 13, you pick your subjects for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's so difficult. I remember having to do it when I was at school, and like I was kind of good at things like art and music and English, and then, you know, definitely I think my teacher actually wrote in my report for PE, I don't suggest that Joe takes this for standard grade, which I was fine with. I thought I'd stick with that silver medal for the wheelbarrow race and be done with that.
When I was doing my work at school, you know, on the blackboard with the chalk.
I had blackboards and chalk at primary school.
I was meant that was instead of my homework, and that was my I need to take my blackboard home with me.
All right, okay.
I think now, yeah, quite right. Get a grounding and everything. You don't need to make a decision. And years ago, you know, you got into a job, you stayed in a job. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you get in a job, you move around.
But even the way the school system is set up now, I mean, we went through, they had an award ceremony the other night, we went along to it, and it's just incredible that, you know, they kind of look at the child as an individual and try and guide them, and they have all these careers nights where you think, oh, that's a job I wouldn't have known existed. Whereas yeah. In my day, I mean, I'm in my 50s, so in my day it was, you were either going to be a nurse or a teacher. If you were really, really, really clever, you might have gone down law or medicine, but that was very rare. So you are a secretary, and that was it. And if your personality or your abilities didn't lie within that, that's why I think I kind of drifted in and out of things. Yeah. Where if I'd known about PR and marketing and hospitality, I'd have jumped at that.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Christelle, do you think it's kind of hard for her to focus? I mean, obviously it's hard for any young person to kind of focus on what you want to do for the rest of your life, because I know myself, I changed about 50,000 times before I...
And you're still young, you could have a change, yeah.
Not that young, Maureen. But like, do you think she finds it kind of hard to kind of focus on maybe a subject, however, because she's got gymnastics there in her mind, and she's thinking that's still a goal she wants to achieve before she kind of settles into
her career? I think she's looking at doing both at the moment. I think she just thinks, you know, this is where I want to go. She'd like to go for Commonwealth. She's got her eye on that. And she's sort of, they've sort of made them a kind of prep squad just now that she's part of. So she's thinking, right, I can try and go along this path, but I'm still, you know, when I come home from training, I'm on my academic path. So I think, you know, for most of the kids are the same. Most of them are thinking that. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm not going to do well. I'll just ditch my schoolwork because I want to do gymnastics. You know, they very much, you know, understand that they have to do both.
Can I ask you, can you make a living out of gymnastics? You know, a lot of sports you can turn professional, you can make a living. What's it like in the bigger, wider world for a gymnast?
Yeah, then she'd have to earn a lot of money to pay me back.
That's just being a mum. That's got nothing to do with gymnastics.
I know.
Try being a gran.
I mean, I've not really looked into it too much, but I would say, no, most of the time it's us forking out, I think, until you get to the big. Yeah. I think when you maybe even get to Commonwealth level, you would be given funding, but I don't know, as an actual living, I think, unless you move down south.
And then of course, if you do what the, you know, the previous ones have done, in terms of they go into the media and they do so, I think that's about the only
I think if you've
open.
Got I mean there's a fellow, Niall Wilson, who's a gymnast down south, and he's got his own YouTube channel, he's produced clothing, he does this blog every day, all the kids, all the gymnasts follow him, and I think he's making a lot of money with that massive following, but he's been very, very clever. And you've got Louise Smith as well, who's done that, Beth Tweddle, you know, so
and they've made themselves TV personalities, haven't they?
So I suppose it's like, maybe, you know, if you can cash in afterwards almost, because and then you've got a very short period of time, because if you think of every 4-year cycle, there's a new batch of gymnasts who the kids are then following and excited about.
I was just going to ask, is the focus in 2020 then for Tokyo?
No, 2022.
2022 for
Commonwealth.
Commonwealth, sorry, my weight in Olympics.
No, I was just thinking there when you were saying that about the Guyanese blog. It's, I think, what's kind of happening in a lot of cases now across a lot of sports. People are trying to kind of market their personality, because if you are, you could be a terrible football player, but if you're well liked and well known, people want you to sponsor their brand, and you, they get you involved in promotional things, and then soon enough you've kind of made yourself into a media personality. And I think there's a lot of people wanting to do that, so that then when their competitive time ends, it leads into media work, and you get a lot of the athletes now kind of presenting at the Commonwealth and, mm-hmm. and covering all of the different sports and things. So do you think that would be something that would interest Cassell? Do you think she would want to move into that?
Yeah, I think she's probably got the personality for it. She's talked about coaching as well. You know, she likes working with the younger kids as well and helping them. She's just got so many things, and I think that's what's great about nowadays. You know, although she's got a sport, she's very good at art, and she's very good at makeup. She does a wee makeup blog account that, you know, she posts things of different. Like, although she won't do my makeup because she said my face is too wrinkly, but. She's obsessed with eyebrows and
stop giving her lifts. Stop giving her lifts to gymnastics.
That's it. You've had it. So you know, there's so many different things that you know that there's so many different opportunities. But yeah, I think that probably I'd said to her before, "No, would you like something like that?" But you've got to get your credibility in your sport, mm-hmm. first of all. So.
Yeah, it's hard work to get there. You think that they actually sit there and do nothing instead of sit in front of a screen. Yeah. But yeah, there's a bit of hard work, and jobs are changing. Mm. So it'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be an interesting journey for you to go through.
Yes.
Where are the Commonwealth 2022?
Birmingham.
All right. So it's not as if you and Derek have got a far travel to go.
No, we're not saving up for a flight to Australia or anything. So
but that
hopefully
would,
fingers crossed.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just a start.
It's a nice dream for her, and it's what keeps her focused. So,
yeah, and I think when you've got like sort of home games, mm-hmm. you always find that a bigger squad can go because they can afford mm-hmm. to send so many more. So that opens up more opportunities for more athletes.
Definitely, and there's a lot of talent at her gym as well. There's a lot of talent.
Which gym is it she goes
to? City of Glasgow.
City of Glasgow. Yeah, excellent. So I was just thinking as we were talking there that Gabby Logan, she must be one of the best known gymnasts to come out of that and still have a career, because that was her sport, wasn't
of course,
it?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a very, very talented girl, but tell me, how do you kind of balance that life as well? Because obviously you've said you're, you know, taking her to sport, and you obviously she dedicates a lot of time to our schedule's already jam-packed between school and homework and our training after school as well. So how do you balance that, June? Because you're the chauffeur.
I have no life. It's a nice world, actually. So the gymnastics world, and you become friendly. It's like, you know, when your kids start school and you maybe make friends with the mums then. It's the same with the gymnastic world. And because of the nature of my job, a lot of my work's at the weekend. So I've become friendly with mums that I can maybe take their kids through the week if they're working full time. And then they can take Christelle to, you know, she does a strength and conditioning class and she does a dance class. And I've got a mum who's very helpful, Teresa, who takes Christelle for me. And we all kind of juggle about, you know, to help each other. So it becomes your social life as well. And I mean, last year when she qualified for the British finals and we went down to Liverpool, and I'd never been to Liverpool before, and we absolutely loved it. We loved the Echo. We loved walking around the shops, and you know, so that was kind of like a social for us as well. So I know it sounds very sad, I'm living my life through my daughter, but that side of it is very, very enjoyable. It's hard. I'm lucky that my job's flexible. So if I know that Christelle's competing, say the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we're going down on the Friday, and I'll try and get work Monday to Thursday, but I know I can't work that weekend.
Yeah.
Or if she's going away with the team, then I think, oh great, I can go and work, you know, in Aberdeen or, you know, Kilsyth or wherever, and I can go further afield, or even down to Newcastle or something.
Yeah.
And a job that I probably wouldn't normally take. So
mm-hmm. Now tell me this. I watch a programme called Dance Moms. Love it. So you seen this, Maureen? Mm-hmm. Reality show.
Oh, you've got to watch it.
Reality show, and it's like a group of young competitive dancers, but then their mums are in it as well, and they're like dance moms, stage mm-hmm. moms, and they fight, and it's hilarious. Yeah,
the mums are more competitive than the dancers, aren't they?
They are, definitely, mm-hmm. and I think we do find this in a lot of sports and a lot of competitive mm-hmm. places. Like with dance moms, it's like they just they've out right kind of floofing each other before. But do you, so is it a very kind of friendly community in gymnastics? Yeah,
very much so. And I think you realise that, you know, when your daughter starts and they're maybe like 6 or 7 or 8, they start competing, you go up to a competition in Perth and it's about 300 kids in it. By the time they get to 12, 13, 14, there's maybe 50. By the time you get to in the Scotland squad just now, the junior squad, there's maybe like 14 girls. So you become very close and you all want to help each other and you all want to help Scottish gymnastics and you want to do as much as you can to help the sport and bring the sport on. And the mums are fabulous. So if somebody finds some new vitamin drink that's great, then we're all like, oh, listen, we're all in a group chat, try this. Or, you know, if anyone's got any problems, you know, somebody can't do this move or whatever, everybody wants to help everyone. So it's a nice world for the mums as well.
That's really nice. It's really nice to hear of everybody being very supportive. And on another thing that I've learned from Dance Moms.
I'm just going to ask you a wee bit more about Dance Moms, yeah?
Oh, I'll tell you about it after the show. So one thing I'd like to know about is the costumes. Obviously, Christelle does the floor pieces, so I assume she has to wear some very...
Well, when they compete for the club, we've got a club leotard, which you maybe change every 2 years. And we had a fabulous one from a company called Orosport, which is covered in crystals. It's £150, so it wasn't a fortune when you compare it to like other dance outfits that might go into the hundreds. But what happens in most in the bigger competitions, you compete the all-round and they have an all-round winner. And then the top 8 on each piece go forward to the following day. And that day... they can wear their own one. So that's the one that usually costs a lot.
Right, okay. So, and... Oh, I know it must be. Is it quite an expensive sport to compete in? Because I think this is something that we've actually found amongst, like, kind of different people we've spoken to in the show, like supporting your children through sport. I think one of the things is the kind of, obviously, the time, you know, that kind of balance of getting the kids to and from sports. But I think one of the issues currently with certain sports is the cost of it, and people just don't actually have the money to be sending their kids. Is that like...
It's a hidden cost. I mean, you know your fees every month. And Christelle does strength and conditioning class as well. She does a dance class, but they then have physio, they go for sports massage. You've got your petrol driving them back and forward. You've got the squad camps that you pay for, the competitions that you normally have to pay for, special food like smoothies and things that I make her, and special vitamins that you buy. Okay. She's vegetarian, it doesn't like vegetables, so you know, so I'm always buying extra supplements and things and hiding them in her food. And so, you know, there's a lot of other things that, you know, outwith the costume. The costume probably isn't the biggest part. It's more the you know, the other things.
Just all adds up.
The maintenance.
But in terms of competition, what they're wearing is taken into their results, isn't it?
I think that's acrobatic, not an artistic.
Ah, right. So I'm speaking to someone else because they were telling me that they got their outfits from Russia because they did the best ones, but they were so expensive. But they actually got their marks depending on how they looked and how they were dressed and their hair and their makeup as well. So that's not the same for the disciplines that
Christelle does. No, you look pretty in your leotard, but if you fall off the beam, you've had it. So.
That's true.
Oh,
absolutely. So what's next for Christelle then? She's kind of focused towards the Commonwealth, and that's in how many? She 2 years for that?
It's 4 years, really. It's 2022. There'll be Scottish again, British. There's British teams competition coming up as well. Squad trials. There's a couple of internationals as well, so she's hoping to get picked for those. So yeah, there's quite a few.
What sort of age group are you, you know, when you're a successful gymnast? Because, you know, Christelle will be, 18 in 2022. Mm-hmm. How long do you think she can compete? Is there an age limit on being a gymnast?
It depends on your fitness and how you feel. I mean, if you've done it since the age of 3, chances are by the time, if you've got to, you know, your aim might be, I've got to win Commonwealth, that's fine. A lot of the girls who go to Commonwealth say, I'm going to give up after this one. They go and they get such a buzz from it, they want to work to a second one. So it depends on your fitness, and also financially, you know, if you're able to support yourself, you know, if you're living at home, it's fine, but you know, you maybe have to pick up your studies again. You know, you maybe have to contribute to the, you know, the family income. You know, it just depends on your personal circumstances as well, and whether they get sponsorship or whether they get support or whether the parents can afford to keep them going, because it is expensive.
I suppose also in terms of how you matured as an individual, you know, everyone's body is different at 14 to 18.
So. I mean, a lot of girls drop out. Where Christella is a junior just now, that this is a crucial part as to whether they go to senior at 16, because it's all the things, you know, the physically, you know, if they hit puberty and suddenly you grow bits you didn't have before. So if you're trying to balance on a 4-inch bit of wood, you know, you don't have the same kind of weight distribution that you maybe had when you were like wee and skinny. And even like the skinniest girls can suddenly balloon right out, but not in terms, not fatness, you know, it's just that their muscle
but
and they
can't,
and you know, they lose maybe a bit of the flexibility. So it's, if you're in a good club and you're, you know, you've got the right guidance and the right diet and, you know, you're looking after yourself, then, you know, hopefully you can go right through and then from 16 you turn senior.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you mentioned there was sponsorship. That's something we've had a lot of discussions about, Maureen, is sponsorship across sports. Is it quite difficult for the girls to get sponsorship in gymnastics?
It can be if you're looking. I mean, we've been looking for it as a club as well. But, I mean, personally, Christelle's been very lucky that she's had three or four people that have come in. And recently we had a company, Carrick Packaging, who have given Christelle a lot of support. They've been fabulous. We've also in the past we've had Lytho Printing, Stuart Milne, Alec Morrison Boxing and Amy Recovery, who have all helped her along the way. So it's great because I wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise. So, I mean, sometimes you go down to something like just going down to British, by the time you travel, hotel, food, and you're maybe, you have to book beforehand because you don't know if they're going to qualify for the finals or not.
Yeah.
So you're booking a hotel, you're booking your travel. I mean, it could be £500-600 just for 3 days, you know, and that's just once, you know, and that's without going internationally. So if they're going internationally, it'll be subsidised by Scottish Gymnastics. But if you want to go, it's in my flight and my, you know, my accommodation,
absolutely,
and everything else.
And you want to be there, don't you? I mean, that's why you're supporting them, and it's such a proud moment when they achieve and they come off and they feel that, you know, they've done their best, because that's all you ask for, you know, do your best, whether you win, lose or whatever.
Well, every parent invests a lot, not just financially, but you invest a lot time-wise and emotionally. You know, you've gone the journey with them, so you want to go and see them walk out in that arena, and whether, you know, if they do their best or they don't do their best, you want to be there.
And are you an emotional mum at that point?
Yes, I'm usually ill. My stomach's usually in a knot, yes.
In question, I do want to ask you, June, do you still have a can with your face on it?
I do, yes.
Yes, because I'm not going to lie to you, I checked eBay before you came into the studio.
What am I worth?
Oh, there's people, the thing is, they're all getting sent over from Australia and America, so you are worldwide. And I'm telling you, they had pretty much all the girls there, and you were very rare to find, so you must be a favourite.
I think so.
And there you go.
My dad used to lift them out the gutter if he saw them in the gutter. And then he nearly got knocked over by a taxi one day because he was bent over pulling one out the gutter.
Yeah, and as the story goes, he was saying, I was just picking my daughter out of the gutter.
Not for the first time.
Oh, it's been great having you on, Jen, and we're so glad to hear about Christelle as well, and we wish her all the best going forward.
Thank you so much. Thank you, I've loved it.
Next time you come in, you'll need to bring her with.
Yeah. And I won't get a word in choice.
And I think also let us know when she has, you know, her competitions on. We're always happy to promote, particularly the results. We want to give a roundup of all sports. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
I'll do
absolutely.
That.
You going to buy a can on eBay?
Well, I think it's an investment. I mean, I'm surprised to hear how, you know, this the book. I think the book would be great. Yeah. And, you know, to have somebody like yourself signing it, I think we could be on a wee bit of money.
I'm glad the can's an investment, because Derek will tell you I'm not an investment.
Yes, but what does Derek know?
I know exactly.
Yes.
What does Derek know?
Sorry, Derek.
Derek's currently on school girl. Yeah, so it's been great to have you in, and I'm sure we'll have you back in again. But to sign us off this evening, you have chosen a song for us. Can you tell us your song?
Yes. It's Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing.
Give us a few lines.
No.
That's a stock
singer,
answer.
A singer I'm not.
Almost got you. Well, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Let's Hear It for the Girls with me, Jo Ferry, Maureen McGonagall, and this evening's guest, June Lake, on Rock Sport Radio. Love music, live sport.
I could stay away just to hear you breathing, watch you smile while you are sleeping, while you're far away dreaming. I could
spend my life in this sweet surrender. I could stay lost in this moment forever.
Radio, Scotland's only mix of rock and sport.